Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an episode of Paranormal Stories. Today I'm doing something a little different. In this episode, I'll be sharing a chapter from my book, Verified Near-Death Experiences. My hope is that this gives you a sense of how the audiobook sounds. Each chapter of the book features a different near-death experiencer and provides a detailed account of their entire experience. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I hope you enjoy this reading. Chapter 2: The Peace Above, the Chaos Below. Barbara Bartolome. He asked, "What did you feel like? What did you see?" Barbara continued. He completely validated it for himself and all the people in the room. I think that freaked them out. In 1987, at 31, Barbara Bartolome lived in Santa Barbara with her husband and two young children, an 8-year-old son and a 5-month-old daughter. A few weeks after giving birth to her daughter, Barbara ruptured a disc in her lower back while lifting a heavy object. Her doctor said the injury was permanent and would confine her to a wheelchair for the rest of her life. Barbara sought a second opinion from a neurosurgeon at St. Francis Hospital in Santa Barbara, who assured her he could repair the injury and help her regain her mobility. A neurosurgeon scheduled Barbara for a laminectomy discectomy, a procedure to remove fragments from her shattered disc. He also brought an orthopedic surgeon onto the team for added expertise. The neurosurgeon informed Barbara that they would conduct a test the night before the surgery to determine whether any disc fragments had pierced her spinal cord, as they were concerned about a potential spinal fluid leak. After checking into the hospital, the staff sent Barbara to the X-ray unit for a myelogram. In this procedure, the doctors would inject iodine dye into Barbara's spinal cord at the base of her neck. The medical staff instructed her to remain perfectly still on the X-ray table, as any movement could cause severe headaches lasting for months. The neurosurgeon and orthopedic surgeon joined the X-ray team in the room to observe the procedure, knowing there wouldn't be enough time to receive the myelogram results before Barbara's surgery scheduled for 7 a.m. the next day. The team included two surgeons, two X-ray technicians, and a nurse. Barbara lay on the table as an X-ray technician beside her pressed a button to tilt the table, gradually moving her into an upright position. This movement would allow the dye to flow downward along her spinal cord. Meanwhile, the other technician sat at a monitor, ready to capture images as the dye moved through her spinal cord to detect any leakage. As the table began moving, Barbara immediately felt disorientated. "I thought, I wonder if I'm supposed to feel like this, but the two X-ray techs were talking to each other and I didn't want to interrupt them. As the table kept tilting, I felt weirder and weirder, almost like I was going to faint," Barbara recalled. She wanted to speak up and let them know how she felt, but she found herself unable to say anything or even move. The cause of the issue became clear. The technician hadn't noticed his finger pressing the wrong button. Instead of raising the table to bring her upright, he was inadvertently lowering her head. The dye injected at the base of Barbara's skull began flowing into her brain, altering the pressure and impairing her brain function. After about 3 minutes, she started hyperventilating. This finally drew the attention of the technician, who looked up to see her eyes rolled back into her head. Barbara explained. He leaned back to see where his thumb was, and then he had this look of, you know, absolute scared and shock and, "Oh no, oh my God." At that moment, Barbara closed her eyes briefly, and when she opened them, she found herself looking down at the room from above. "I didn't look to see if I had a body, but I felt there was something that the back of my head was against, like the ceiling. I was looking straight down on the top of everyone's heads and the top of the equipment. I'd been panicking in my body and feeling very scared because I was hyperventilating. But when I got up on the ceiling, the next second, I was absolutely calm and it was completely peaceful." From her viewpoint on the ceiling, Barbara watched as one of the team members urgently called a code blue. As she took in the scene, she saw her own body lying below and realized she must have died. Almost immediately, she sensed a boundless presence beside her. "It felt so incredibly immense," she said, "so knowing of who I was, so connected to me. From the first point of eternity all the way to the future, throughout eternity, I literally felt this presence, and it seemed to me that's who God was." Their communication was purely telepathic, an exchange that didn't need words. It was a seamless connection, direct, thoughtful, and deeply intuitive. Barbara understood something important and said to the presence, "I would really like to go back. If I leave my children in this way, at this time, they won't grow up to be the human beings that they could be if I contribute to them." She also realized she had a life purpose, something she was meant to achieve but hadn't completed yet, and she told the presence of her desire to return. The medical team had sprung into action. The two X-ray technicians immediately began performing CPR, while a nurse urgently called for a defibrillator. From Barbara's perspective above, she could see the nurse shouting "Stat!", her panic unmistakable. The intensity of the noise and commotion below upset Barbara. "I felt it was obnoxious. It literally felt very loud, very chaotic. It felt awful. Actually, all the stuff down below was awful compared to what I was experiencing with this being and the sensitive, gentle, kind and loving nature I was feeling from this being," she said. A woman entered the room with an oxygen cart and placed a mask over Barbara's face. Moments later, a man arrived carrying a small box. He removed several small white pads, peeling off their backing and carefully pressing them onto various spots on Barbara's chest. Curious, Barbara turned to the presence beside her and asked her what the man was doing. Instantly, she felt herself transported from a viewpoint near the ceiling down to the box. Now so close, she could examine its details as though it were inches from her eyes. "When I asked that question, I was moved from the ceiling vantage point above my body right down in front of the box that was on a ledge next to my body that was lying on the X-ray table. There was a ledge, and this box was there. I was right in front of the box as if it was like 5 inches from my eyes. There was a glass area of it, and it was greenish," Barbara recalled. The moment she saw this, her perspective shifted back up to the ceiling. Below, the two surgeons discussed the situation. They agreed that too much time was passing and the risk of brain damage was increasing. The lack of a defibrillator heightened the urgency. At last, the orthopedic surgeon directed the two X-ray technicians to step back. Barbara described what happened next. He stepped 2 steps forward, took his fist from behind his back, arched it from behind his back over his head, and pounded the center of my body on the X-ray table right where my chest is. When he did that, I watched my body react to the blow, but I did not return to it. The presence asked her, "But if you go back, you will still be in your marriage. What will you do?" Scenes from her past surfaced. Memories from her marriage. Her husband was an angry man, often directing his frustration toward both her and their children. For years, she had gone to great lengths to keep his temper at bay, conforming to his demands to avoid conflict, living in a state of constant vigilance. The presence presented her with a choice: to return to her body or to move forward into the afterlife. "After I saw those brief film clips of all that stuff, I felt that I had all the time that I needed to make a decision of whether I wanted to stay or whether I wanted to come back. So I evaluated my relationship with my husband. I realized that it wasn't him that needed to change, it was me. I needed to stop accepting his behaviors. I needed to get out. I needed to get away. I said to God, 'If you let me go back, I promise you, I'll get strong enough to leave him.' The second I said the word 'him,' the doctor did the second precordial thump and restarted my heart." Barbara suddenly found herself back in her body, and the orthopedic surgeon looked down at her in shock. Barbara said into the oxygen mask, "What just happened?" The nurse quickly intervened. "Stop, don't talk. We need to stabilize you." For the next 20 minutes, the medical team worked to stabilize her condition. Once they removed the oxygen mask, Barbara told them she'd been up by the ceiling watching everything that had taken place. The neurosurgeon, standing beside her bed, responded with a sarcastic, "Oh, brother," as if dismissing her experience entirely. Barbara described the entire sequence of events she had witnessed from above, recounting every detail with striking accuracy. "I just blurted out everything that had just unfolded down below. She was the person who brought in the oxygen cart and put it on my face. That man brought in a heart monitor. I watched it flatlining. I could hear it making that monotone sound. That one was on the phone the whole time, and she was calling for a defibrillator unit, but it never came. He was doing CPR with you. One guy was blowing in my mouth. One guy was doing chest compressions. They switched places about every 2 minutes. I watched that until you said this to him. I told the doctors what they had said in their conversation, and I said, then you stepped forward and struck my chest twice. I completely validated my entire near-death experience." She described the neurosurgeon's reaction as she recounted the events. "I watched him. His hands were clenched, and they started shaking, actually started shaking. And he had fists clenched, and then he had his teeth kind of clenched. Then, when I stopped, he said, I'm not going to stand here and listen to this. And he stormed out of the room." The orthopaedic surgeon, who has been in contact with Barbara since the incident, held her hand and asked her to recount everything she had witnessed once more. He asked, "What did you feel like? What did you see?" Barbara continued, "He completely validated it for himself and all the people in the room. I think that freaked them out. The rest of the people in the room, you know, the guy who brought in the heart monitor, the lady who brought in the oxygen cart, the nurse that was there originally, the two x-ray techs and the orthopaedic surgeon, all of them stayed in the room as I continued to validate it. Nobody laughed and nobody freaked out. Only the neurosurgeon freaked out." The hospital staff knew well that a procedural error, a mistake made by the man responsible for operating the controls on the table, had caused Barbara's heart to stop. They recognised that this mistake had put Barbara's life in jeopardy, making the incident a potential liability for the hospital. "Not a single person in the hospital would talk to me about it," Barbara recalled. "No one would mention it. They would either look at my chart and say, I don't see anything about that here, or they would say, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry." Verification events. CPR. Barbara detailed every moment that occurred while she was undergoing CPR, describing actions, sounds, and conversations with startling precision. According to the heart monitor, her heart had completely stopped and, medically, within 20 seconds of her heart stopping, her brain would have flatlined as well, rendering her physically incapable of perceiving anything through her senses. She described how a nurse had urgently called for the defibrillator using the term STAT. She correctly identified the nurse who brought in the oxygen cart and the man responsible for bringing the heart monitor. She pointed out the two men performing CPR on her, detailing how they had alternated between giving her breaths and performing chest compressions, switching roles every 2 minutes. Her descriptions were precise, noting, "They were blowing in my mouth, but then they just switched and did chest compressions every 2 minutes and change." Conversations. Beyond actions, Barbara recounted the conversations people in the room were having, accurately recalling snippets of dialogue and the expressions of concern on their faces. The level of detail in her account left no doubt that she had witnessed the full scene, something that should have been impossible given her physical state. Her descriptions left the medical team both stunned and unsettled, as Barbara's awareness seemed to defy the limits of her physical senses. So today I was reading from my book, Verified Near-Death Experiences. And if you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.